Every month I talk to David Bacher from Corian, and it's always an interesting conversation because he picks up the best performing asset managers in the country, and regularly Fairtree is there. We haven't had a chance for a while to talk to anyone from Fairtree. We're changing that today. Cornelis Zeeman is on the equities side. He's a portfolio manager at Fairtree, and he's today's market commentator. Nice to talk with you, Cornelis. Fairtree's actually been pretty low profile. You guys don't advertise at airports, and certainly we don't see too many billboards about it. Is that a deliberate approach? Because you've got a lot to shout about. Certainly, I see time and time again, you're right up there on the performance tables.
Yeah, I suppose it's a factor of our journey. We started out as a hedge fund business, which catered more to sophisticated investors who don't really invest on where you market. They invest based on your returns and whether they think that is sustainable. And over the years, we've grown very successful equity franchise, but we have very successful fixed income capabilities. And that has now flown through to the balanced fund and the cautious fund. And 5 years ago, we started our venture into global equities and emerging market equities, and we've been fortunate enough to be recognized across the board with winning awards from Raging Bull and Morningstar, etc. And we've grown to 150 billion AUM. I think when I started 10 years ago at Fairtree, we were 20 billion. 40% of our investor base are global investors, mostly sovereign wealth funds, who recognize our performance and capabilities. But our next quest is to raise our profile further in South Africa, specifically under the retail market. So hopefully we can become more of a household name going forward.
It's a big number, 40% through sovereign funds. Can you tell us what countries they come from?
Yeah, so there's Norges, and then there's quite a few countries in the Middle East, and then we also have support from North America, and specifically Canada, and also in Asia. So it's really a broad spectrum of support from the global investors. And that's mostly into SA equity long only, which they want to use, because they typically choose country managers. But we are having fruitful conversations now on running an emerging market fund for them, because you can actually add a lot of alpha by allocating to different countries, because the divergence in performance is massive in emerging markets. You have Mexico and Brazil and Korea selling off quite dramatically over the last month, for example, while SA in China is now in vogue. And we know India has been in vogue for the last 5 years, and also benefiting a lot from people calling China uninvestable over the last couple of years. A lot of money has gone from China into India. So if you can spot those moves and react to it, you can actually add a lot of returns to your allocation, not just security selection alpha, which has typically been our strength.
I suppose, begs the next question. We've heard a lot about the Government of National Unity and the positive vibes in South Africa. Our partners at The Economist and the Financial Times of London have been beating those drums. But where the tacky hits the road, where you guys see the income or the money coming in, is there more interest from those investors who would use you to come into this market?
The conversations haven't really picked up since the election, but attending conferences with all the local companies where foreign investors also attend, speaking to them, they're definitely more interested now. But we haven't really seen foreign capital coming into the local market as of yet. You must remember that South Africa has shrunk in the various benchmarks, whether it's MSCI EM or global equities. And the foreign investors' checkbooks are big. So when they're moving a couple of billion dollars, they want to make sure that they're investing behind a sustainable trend and not just good vibes. They've been burned with Ramaphosa a couple of years ago. So they were happy to miss out on this 20% odd rally that we've seen in the local market since the election. They want to see real change, and that our economic growth picks up to, say, 2-3% on a run rate basis, because that's where the real money will get made. So it's mostly the local managers that benefited from the rally.
Mm-hmm. The interesting point that you say that they were burnt by Ramaphosa. So I suppose fool me once, it's my fault. Fool me once, your fault. Fool me twice, my fault. So they're taking a little bit more of a conservative approach there. Just looking at the local picture, today we had Equitas coming out with financial results. How much do you pay attention to the SENS reports and to see if you can get perhaps an advantage from getting the news first?
Yes, definitely. So we come from a hedge fund background, so we're extremely active across all our equity mandates, whether it's hedge fund or long only, and we definitely think one of our competitive advantages is to process information quickly and react to it. There are limitations. Most of SA Inc companies have become quite illiquid. Liquidity on the JSE in general has dropped off by 20 or 30% over the last few years. So, it's becoming increasingly difficult to react quickly and make a couple of extra percent through that. So it's mostly, understanding what is the trend in earnings, and then seeing opportunity and valuation. But yeah, definitely as news comes out, we process it and adjust the portfolios accordingly.
Because today there were two bits of news that I found interesting on the Stock Exchange News Service. The one was the interims from Equitas, and I'd be very interested to know if you've got a view on that. And the second one was notification of an investor day by Attac. And I had a look at the presentation that they're going to give to people that they presumably are taking around Waterfall and the other areas. Are those retail investors can't get to, they can certainly read from the Stock Exchange News Service what a company like Equitas puts out there, but can't really get an inside picture as professional investors would. Would you go along to presentations like that, investor days, as Attac, which is also a property company, said?
Yes, we definitely do site visits and we attend these investor days. We're not attending the specific one at Waterfall, but I see there is a YouTube broadcast, so people on the street can actually also access. Obviously, we don't have access to any inside information when we attend these events, so we're not at a big informational advantage. But it is important to know and hear firsthand from management what their plans are. Waterfall is 70% odd of their asset base and I think 60% of the earnings. So it's a very important asset for them. I remember 7 or 8 years ago being taken around by management in a golf cart in Mall of Africa. Very impressive asset that they've built. And Attac reported very good results a month ago, and the share price has performed very well this year. I think they're up more than 45% year to date. The Equitas result was rather mediocre, but as expected. So dividends was raised by, I think, 1.5%. So they're tracking in line with the full year guidance, which is also basically 1.5% of growth. Distributable earnings grew 5.4%. Their loan to value, so how much debt they have, that increased from 39% to 41%, but they still have a plan to bring that down to 38% at the end of the FY25 as they dispose some of their non-core assets. And their share price has also been performing well in line with SA Inc. So they're also up 17% or so since May. And the dividend guidance basically places them on, I think, a 9 or 9.5% dividend yield, which is quite attractive. But it's basically similar to what you can get on an Absa Bank, 9.5%, or BTI, and those counters are much more liquid. So it depends on what type of exposure you want in the fund. We like to play in the larger caps. We've always, even when we were small, we were very vocal that we predominantly invest in large caps because we want to be nimble and change our mind when the facts change.
Sounds to me like Fairtree is quite a bit like 361, where you scan the whole picture. Do you also stop yourselves from being earmarked as value or growth or momentum, etc.?
Yes, we are style agnostic. So the ideal investment for us is a company that is high quality and high growth, but you have to be disciplined with the valuation you pay. So I think where we differ from some other managers in South Africa is we're not shy of investing in cyclical companies. You can actually make the most money and also lose the most money if you invest in cyclical companies, because those companies tend to over and under earn, and the ratings also overshoot and undershoot. So we pride ourselves in trying to get the cycles right, but essentially we're open to invest in any type of company. Anything has a price, but the ideal company is a high-quality growth company at a cheap valuation. But those are few and far between, as you would know. Some of the best companies on the JSE, like Clicks and Capitec and ShopRite, the likes, they come at quite punchy multiples. But where value managers would shy away from those companies based on the multiple, we're very happy to do the valuation on our side and decide what is a reasonable range for every company.
You mentioned cyclical companies. I've been watching over the past few days the performance of ArcelorMittal, and it seems to be going up almost in a straight line. Is that too small for you guys to get involved in?
Yes. ArcelorMittal is a bit too small, and it is very difficult sector to operate in. They had a cost of production disadvantage versus the likes of China, and the Chinese companies also have a higher tolerance to make losses for strategic reasons. So it's a very tough space for them to compete. ArcelorMittal is relevant for us to monitor because they're a key client of a company like Afrimat, which we like. And we saw with their recent result that they struggled when Arcelor struggled. So we need to monitor everything that happens in the market, whether it's as a direct influence on our investment case or indirect influence.
Afrimat's interesting. I did talk to Andries van Heerden, the CEO, yesterday. We've been following, I've been following his story for the last 2 decades, and he described the 6 months of the end of August as the worst ever in the last 20 years. And yet the share price, after dipping very briefly, bounced back up again. I guess they're a reflection of good communication. The shareholders didn't abandon them.
Yes, Andries and the team are very transparent. And we attended a conference just a couple of weeks ago where they made it clear that this was a very tough half. I must say the earnings announcement was even worse than I expected, but clearly the other people factored it into their estimates, and they're willing to look through a tough result because they understand the strategy at the company. The long-term mindset of Andries and the team has proven to work over time, and they're willing to make short-term sacrifices for long-term gains. So it looks like everything is picking up post this interim period, and the long-term prospects still remain good.
Andries is one of the stars of the Joburg Mining Indaba, which was held in the past week. Bernard Swanepoel, who hosts it, came out saying he feels a bitter sense of optimism at last for mining. How are you seeing South African miners' prospects?
There's definitely optimism across the board in South Africa when you speak to the corporates. We're not seeing green shoots in terms of activity levels picking up yet. In terms of mining specifically, I think South Africa is endowed with fantastic natural resources. But I think there is some environmental and other regulation and requirements, which makes it a difficult place to operate in. And mining is a very long-term game. So you're sinking billions of rand of capex, and you'll only see the returns 5 and 10 years from now. So you need a lot of policy certainty when you make these decisions, and you're dealing with labor, typically are thousands of people working, and dealing with labor unions can be difficult. So we haven't really seen many exploration taking place in South Africa, and also not many new greenfield projects. So that actually is a nice advantage for a company like Afrimat, which is smaller than the traditional miners, because there's a lot of resources that have been explored and where mining has started and operations have actually shut in the tough times, and they can pick up these assets on the cheap. So we see it in other companies too, like African Rainbow Minerals. We picked up Bokoni Platinum Mine. We had our reservations about that, and we still think they overpaid for that and in the wrong part of the cycle. But there's a lot of assets that are sort of sitting on the shelves that other companies with stronger balance sheets and longer term horizons can pick up at good prices, hopefully, and earn good returns. But in terms of new investment, I'm not very optimistic that we're at a point of inflection there.
You know, I get the feeling from everything that you've said that South Africa really is needing to prove itself again. It's both the government of national unity and the regulations, the mining sector, which has carried this country for many of the decades going back, has been stagnating for a long time, and it's not going to come right until there's confidence that this time it will be different. Would you say that's accurate?
Yes, certainly. There's so many things that goes into making a 10 and 20-year decision when starting a project. Firstly, you need energy security, which thankfully that has improved dramatically over the last couple of months. But we still don't have guarantees that there will be abundance of cheap energy 5 years from now. I think Andries, on your interview, mentioned that Transnet is at least a 2-year project to turn around. It doesn't help if you get the commodity out of the ground, but then you can't ship it to the ports and sell it. And then there's the other regulation and approvals that I touched on. So there's the network industries definitely needs to improve sustainably for people to get confidence to invest.
A very rational perspective, Cornelius. Is there any upside in all of this?
Yeah, I suppose the fact is that the people that currently do own operational assets, at least they're producing, and they're not going to compete with new production, which bodes well for if there's growing demand for their commodity, then the prices will react positively and those companies will generate good free cash flows and earnings growth going forward.
So that's, I suppose, another reason why Afrimat is so popular amongst professional investors like yourself. Cornelius Zeeman is portfolio manager at Fairtree, and I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.